Warning, the following podcast contains descriptions that some listeners may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Any opinions expressed are all our own and do not in any way represent the opinions of where we work. Just before we get started, I'd like to make a big shout out to the lovely Mark and Bethan, who host the podcast Seeing Red. They are an amazing true crime podcast and they bring out new episodes every Wednesday. So go find them wherever you find your podcast fix.
Hello and welcome to Mad or Bad.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Neil, and this week we're going to be talking about violence and mental health and discussing the case of John McFarlane.
As we approach another general election here in the UK, we have seen the usual promises about the NHS and in particular parity and funding for mental health services. This episode kind of follows on in a way from one of our last episodes.
Episode three, I think it was.
Yes, where we discuss... we discussed the Irish asylums, but then we spoke about the closure of mental health inpatient hospitals and the increase in community care.
By the end of the 1980s, there was a notable decrease in inpatient beds available for mental health patients and the formulation and expansion of community mental health teams. Community mental health teams, for those who don't know, are a team of healthcare professionals, including psychiatrists, mental health nurses and support workers. Sometimes, when funding allows, I guess, psychologists. So they deliver care to people with mental health difficulties living in the community. Locally to us, as we spoke about in the past episode, the city of Derby had two mental health hospitals.
Or asylums, yeah.
The one for the patients from the county of Derbyshire closed in approximately 1993, and the one for patients of the city of Derby was completely closed down and actually knocked down by 2011. We've seen an increase in the outsourcing of mental health community residential services to people such as Rethink, the mental health charity, and other private healthcare providers.
Which, can I just add though, I think Rethink is amazing and they do some really great stuff.
Yeah. Personally, when working as a CPN, a community psychiatric nurse working in a community mental health team, I saw firsthand the so-called austerity measures that this government has imposed on this country since they were elected in 2010. And I should say at this point that, you know, I do vote Labour, so I think it's important for me to say that. But all I'm concerned about, or all we're concerned about, is the care that's delivered to patients. It's not kind of a political...
Can I be naughty, though, and ask you who you're voting for this time?
Well, I want to vote Labour, but I just don't think Jeremy Corbyn is electable. I don't think he's media savvy enough, which sadly a lot of people in this country vote for. But, you know, working for the NHS and valuing the NHS, I just don't think it's safe with the Conservatives.
No, and I think Labour, my opinion, is that Labour best represents the majority of the public and the best interests of the public, whether it is the NHS or whether it is other services.
I mean,
I know you have a bit of a thing about security though and Labour.
Well, defence. I just don't think some of the stuff that Jeremy Corbyn comes out with, you know, as regards nuclear weapons and things like that. Well, nobody wants nuclear weapons, and it'd be fantastic if we didn't have them. And, you know, we could spend all the money on nuclear weapons, we could spend it on hospitals and schools. But, you know, sadly it's a very dangerous world we live in, isn't it? And I just can't see that. Is it, I don't think people trust him as a leader.
I don't get that, though. Maybe it's because I haven't lived in this country long enough, but I don't get that. Like, I think I really like him, actually.
Yeah, I think I really like him. I just don't think... I don't know whether be... you know, if he was the Prime Minister of this country, I think people have got a lot of...
I trust him over Boris any bloody day.
Well, I'd never vote Conservative.
Yeah. But... Sorry to any Conservatives.
Yeah,
well,
it's just our opinion, isn't it? It's just our opinion. So...
When I used to work
as a CPN, I saw firsthand the so-called austerity measures that this government has imposed on this country. So not only cuts to mental health day services, but social care, you know, that affects some of the most vulnerable people in our community.
And the cuts are still ongoing, aren't they? Like, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I have to laugh. I mean, it's politician speak, but I remember David Cameron saying, having the brass balls to stand up there and say, we're all in it together. I mean, I don't know how I can say that with a straight face.
How much does he make?
You know, a lot of politicians are loaded on, whether it be Labour or not, but it's just utter... I mean, has he got so much contempt for this country that he actually thinks people believe that bullshit? I mean, maybe they do, because they got re-elected, didn't they? But so, God knows. But again, you know, we're getting into politics, aren't we? But so yeah, talking about the cuts. So
people are probably listening to this to come away from politics.
Yeah, about citizens.
And here we are.
Going to be everywhere, isn't it? But we are talking kind of about mental health care, aren't we? So I do think it is.
Well, the person is political.
Pertinent.
As I was once told by a very, very nice mental health lecturer.
Very good. So being cynical, one could argue that the closures of such massive establishments, such as mental health hospitals, is for the massive saving of money. Another view is that it helps people to live independently and, you know, integrate as part of the community.
I think some of that idea is great. I do think the idea of helping people to stay in the community, but well in the community, is a really great thing.
Yeah, there needs to be the services there, though, don't
they?
I mean, personally, I saw a lot of great care in one of the hospitals where I used to work, when I kind of started my career. And also in the community, you know, I've also saw people much more lonely and isolated than they ever were in hospital. I think it just sounds better politically, doesn't it? If people are, you know, out of hospital and living in the community.
Well,
it
looks good as regards like numbers and things, like, oh, not so many inpatient admissions.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily mean people are more well. It just means the threshold for actually being hospitalised
is
a lot higher.
Although
a handful of beds.
Yeah.
But
it should be much higher, but I mean, that's another,
Well, all we're trying to get at is really from our experiences, we might see some people who may not need to be hospitalised, but somehow find their way there anyway.
Yeah, but, you know. So, I suppose generally the truth can lie in the middle, and it's different for each individual, you know. For every person that's, I guess, more isolated now than they ever was in the community, maybe there's another person that's loved being out of hospital, you know. So, I mean, this is just my personal...
It goes both ways, and I think you have to talk about the individual, that, you know, it is different for every single person.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously we see a kind of a range of things, really.
Yeah, and like I say, I'm only talking from my own personal clinical experience.
I mean, I've seen the same thing, though. You know, coming across people in the community who are quite poorly, actually, and chronically, and, you know, from a long-term perspective, quite poorly.
Mm.
And they're just living on their own with a lot of support,
and
actually.
Then I think we've both also seen, haven't we, that people in hospital that you kind of question... Why
was it that time for them to be?
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, it goes both ways. So the Royal College of Psychiatrists in 2018 stated that if you take inflation into account, funding between 2016 and 2017 was £100 million less for mental health services than in 2011-2012. And that's a lot of money.
I mean, it depends. I mean, Jesus, you know.
What's Jesus got to do with it?
Well, it's not a Christmas. Depends. It's like any figures, isn't it? It's one set of figures. It doesn't sound good, but I'm just trying to think of, you know...
I don't think there is an argument for that. I think that's just...
Because I would understand that if at 2011 there were loads of these long-stay hospitals, asylums still open, so you wouldn't need... So it's £100 million less by 2016 because you're not staffing all these big hospitals...
Yeah, but the vast majority were closed. Into community.
Yeah, but you're not going to have as many staff in hospitals as in communities. It's never going to happen.
Should be, though.
It's never going to happen. But but obviously by 2011, when these figures are from, you know, the comparison, well, I think they were pretty much shut anyway, weren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway.
So we've closed all these hospitals with the promise to provide this community service, or have the funding at least to provide these services, because we're not for any... for any minute blaming the people who are on the ground. We're literally working with the money that we have, and we do our absolute best. Mm. We try to.
Absolutely.
You know, it's down to the government. However, funding is at its all-time lowest, which makes, you know, absolute no sense at all, really, considering...
I mean, like we say, there's a lot of again, we're just going political for a minute, but there's a lot of promises, isn't there, banded around at the minute, by all parties, isn't they? And it's just always makes me wonder, though, you know, they make these promises now. Why don't they make them, you know, 2 years ago when there wasn't an election, or years ago? But anyway, you know,
it's all parties,
isn't it? It's not just the Conservatives.
So the cuts go further. NHS England have cut funding to a project that helped to identify patterns and flaws in care that helped to reduce attacks by mental health patients. And we just want to say that attacks, so when we're talking about attacks by mental health patients, we mean violence and aggression, but that in general, it's significantly lower than the mainstream media, you know, portrays.
Sensationalism, isn't it? Source papers.
So, you know, and also it's not the NHS's fault either. They are just receiving the funding that they receive.
That's right.
And I think we can both agree that we're very proud of working for the NHS. I know I am.
Absolutely, yeah.
Really, really, really proud. Definitely. I mean, considering I come from Ireland where, there is some form of a private health system, but generally the services don't even come close to the services over here. Like, we pay to see our GP, we pay for medications, and we don't just pay a standard rate, we can pay whatever it costs to purchase that medication. So
I mean, you were saying, weren't you, in Ireland, when you used to live in Ireland, like a prescription, so over here
depends,
it's
what
about
you,
£9, isn't
yeah,
it?
And
so
it's like
all
a
dependent
flat rate,
on what you get,
isn't it? Yeah, but in Ireland it just depends on what you buy. So some medications,
so what would
are
like
more
some antibiotics be, let's say,
antibiotics and steroids and things tend to be fairly cheap. You're probably talking like less than £20,
but still more
but
than
things like
for
inhalers, or you know, like the spacers for inhalers, they can, like, I remember buying things when I was, well, my parents buying things when I was younger, and you're talking near like up to £50.
So presumably there's a lot of people in Ireland that don't get, you know, they just don't bother if they're a bit unwell, because they just, you know, if it's feeding your family or something.
Yeah, it kind of comes in like two different, like there's two different groups really. There's people that I don't think they care how much it costs. They'll be at the GP every week because they're hypochondriacs.
Yeah, and
or you have the money,
you've got to have
or
the
whatever.
Money though, haven't you?
But yeah, I mean, definitely there are people who you just don't go near the GP unless you're literally dying. And also to go to the emergency department, I don't know the exact figure because, well, I haven't gone ever myself. And the last time I knew the figure was probably, I don't know, 10 years ago. But the last time I checked, if you went to the emergency department, just kind of on your own advice.
Would you get charged?
You get charged. I think it was like £90 or something. Mm. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I wonder if
but
it
was,
a lot
there
of people going there that like have got a cold or something.
Yeah, it does.
But that's a whole other argument about
overrun,
access
though,
to
anyway.
GPs though, isn't it?
Well, if you go to your GP first...
Oh, then you don't.
You get a certificate, and then you can go to A&E, and then it's free.
Okay.
Or that's what it was anyway, the last time I checked. So we're very lucky to live somewhere where... Mm. But we also, well, not us, but other people do tend to take it for granted sometimes.
Hmm. It's always been
it does
there,
happen.
Isn't it? Yeah.
There's a lot of waste in the NHS. Although I did read somewhere that actually the NHS is one of the most...
cost-efficient
health systems in the world. So well, maybe we don't take it to...
Yeah,
but isn't that interesting, though, if that's actually true?
I mean, yeah.
So, yeah, we were talking about NHS England. Basically, they've had to cut funding to a project that helped to identify these patterns of violence and aggression in mental health patients. And that's basically keeping everyone safe on the wards. And, you know, it's attempting to learn lessons for the future.
Yeah.
But celebrities... may not help either. So Piers Morgan, the so-called presenter on Good Morning Britain, you particularly like his murder show, though.
Well,
whatever
they're
called.
Not sort of murder shows, are they?
I don't know what he does.
Did he do the serial killer thing in where he goes into jails or something in America?
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I think
he's trying
so.
To be Louis Theroux.
Well, he's not as good as him, is he? But he's but I think he's an arse.
He's not the most. I mean, you really don't like him, but I just don't think he's very likable. But anyways, so he's made mention about celebrities thinking that mental health is fashionable. So surely, you know, the wider ranging issue is that even though certain people do find it fashionable.
Well, if they
you know,
do,
so
that's
what?
Just Piers Morgan saying. We don't know that, do we? But
well, yeah, but also, I don't know. I'm kind of like two thoughts with this. Because like, yeah, loads of celebrities, are, you know, especially like Prince Harry and stuff, they've all been like out talking about mental health.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a royalist at all, but Prince Harry, yeah, he's got it. At least he's using his, you know, whatever it is, fame or...
Yeah, and that's not... And I think he means well with that.
Yeah, I think he does.
But what pisses me off is that it's always... And I shouldn't say it's lesser degrees of mental health, but they're always talking about depression or anxiety. You never, ever hear any celebrities talking about the kind of the dirty side of mental health, which is the more enduring, you know, more complex
like
mental illness.
Schizophrenia.
What celebrity have you heard talking about schizophrenia and poverty and austerity and how they all kind of link together and how difficult it is for people like that to live? Because, yeah, anxiety and depression. I mean, we both suffer from anxiety and depression. You're one and I'm the other. And that's horrible. And I'm not saying it isn't, because it's, you know, it can make life really difficult at times. But to suffer or to experience something like schizophrenia or hearing voices or whatever you want to call it, or something like, you know, bipolar disorder or just something, you know, they do affect your life way more.
Absolutely.
Like, and you just don't hear people talking about things like that.
It depends on the severity of depression, anxiety, doesn't it?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
It can just be as disabling, but I know what you're saying.
But they're talking about those kind of more, you know, accept, because that's acceptable to talk about now, isn't it? But it's still, I don't think it's still, like, in the media now, it's not acceptable to talk about, because people think, oh, they're dangerous.
But it's a start, though, isn't it? It's a start, and
it just needs to go further, though.
Yeah, but you know, and if these so-called personalities or celebrities or whatever, you know, even if they're just bullshitting, if you know, just to get in the paper or whatever, I'm not saying they are, but because they're just people like me, they're trying to earn a living, aren't they? But if they,
if they are,
it's, you know, at the very least, it's still bringing it into the, you know, it's like, oh, so and so.
And making it more acceptable to talk about it, but...
I mean, I remember once working with this patient who in the community, and I think it was Prince... I don't know, one of the bloody royals were doing some kind of mental health thing then. And I remember this patient saying, well, it's all right for them, isn't it? Because even if they're feeling shit, you know, they're not worried about paying the bloody bills, are they?
No, and that's
very true.
That's the complex nature of mental health, though. It's not
just
about experiencing...
It doesn't exist in isolation, the actual illness, doesn't
no.
it?
No.
It can stop you working, and you know, and then it depends on your employer. Well, does your employer understand?
And but also, there's no coincidence that, you know, those more enduring mental illnesses like schizophrenia tend to happen in people with lower socioeconomic status, people in poverty, people who don't have, you know, access to housing and access to work. And it's that feeling of feeling secure, isn't it? And they don't, like, a lot of those people just don't have
well, none
that.
Of us.
And you can't, like, the amount of stress that causes.
Oh, God,
You can't separate that, and you can't separate mental health.
It just becomes intertwined,
you know, and that's why I said earlier, like, the person is political, because you can't separate those things. And then what the hell does Prince Harry know about being poor?
Well, he's not saying that he does.
And he's not saying he does, no, but it's just...
But again, it's better than nothing, though, isn't it? It is better than nothing. At least, you know, it's in the paper. Whoever's doing it, you know, whoever...
Just, I wish they just take it a step further now, though.
Although...
That's what I would like.
Yeah, I mean, personally, you know, I just think there ought to be... you know, if you're saying, what do they say? One, I know it's like a commonly used
one
thing.
One in four, is it?
That have got, yet the funding is shit compared to, and you know, and when
you,
physical.
Yeah, when you look at the physical.
And it's early 2020 and we're supposedly in a rich country. And, might I add, and I know Labour would probably do the same, but the last election, somehow, Conservatives suddenly found £1 billion to give the DUP.
No, it is amazing how they find
fucking
that.
Bollocks, isn't it? Really... makes me, and there's people living fucking rough.
I know. And food
crazy.
Banks.
Absolutely.
And
food
people
banks,
working
yeah.
and 20, using, food,
and using
banks.
Food banks.
And you're like, Jesus
absolutely
Christ.
Absolutely ridiculous.
What
it
is
makes
going
me
on?
So angry.
It is.
Makes me so
it's
angry.
It's awful.
They only seem to give a shit when there's an election. Anyway. It's like
oh,
an election.
Then,
it's an election episode. It's any
election
it's coming
special.
Up, it's coming up though, isn't it?
Woo,
I mean,
woo. But vote Labour though. Or if you don't want to vote Labour, just don't vote Conservative.
Well,
I'm having my bit. So last but not least, around celebrities and all that kind of crap, Piers Morgan did mention on Twitter on one occasion
it's like
reference.
Piers Morgan thing, isn't it?
I know.
But
why are we
arse.
Talking about him? Stupid anyway. First name, isn't it? Sorry to all the peers out there. In reference to mental health, so he basically tweeted in reference to Mental Health Awareness Week, isn't that every other week, as if to say...
Yeah, well, it should be, shouldn't it?
Well, yeah, it should be, but as if to say... Well, what's he trying to say?
Well, he's just trying to say, oh, fucking hell, you know, mental health, what? Mental Health Awareness Week again. God, we do that every bloody week, don't we?
That's rude, because you wouldn't say that about, like, prostate cancer week, or...
No.
or breast cancer awareness.
No, but it's okay to, you know, it's okay to say it's about this. It is a twat.
See, I read that differently, though, as if he was saying it should be every other week, but I don't think that's how he meant it.
No, he was just saying that, oh, what, Mental Health Awareness Week again? Jesus. I mean, we'd have to interview Piers Morgan, won't we, for that? But
I fucking will.
Funnily enough, I don't think he'll be listening to this.
I'm going to fucking tweet him, you know, after this. I'm actually going to tweet him. I will.
Often in the media, mental health and violence seem intertwined, with always an emphasis on the danger of mental people.
Mental people?
Mental people, yeah, yeah.
They're mental.
I'm a mental person.
I am too.
The fact is, most of the violence in society is carried out by people without mental health problems. And the fact is, people with severe mental illness, so, for example, schizophrenia, are much more vulnerable to violence against themselves than against others. For some people with severe mental health problems who are unable to sustain work, there is a misconception sometimes, among some people, that they're having an easy life on benefits. The fact is that they, on the whole, die early, are living poorer housing conditions, are more socially isolated, have more debts, and generally live in just generally poorer socioeconomic circumstances.
Yeah,
I mean, I've never worked with any patients that, you know, on benefits that are, you know, having a fucking great time. It's on your skin.
No, not people who are, unwell.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not people are unwell on benefits.
It's not a fun thing.
No.
I don't think I've ever worked... I don't think I've worked with many people who are rich and have had mental health problems. Have you?
Yeah.
I can think of one.
I remember one person that he was... Well, I think he was loaded. I mean, he had his own business, lived in a massive house, and didn't appear to have any... kind of...
Like stressors from that kind of...
No. He was really unwell. He made a full recovery, but...
What was his diagnosis then?
He was really, really depressed.
Yeah.
He didn't get out of bed for about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's funny, because the same person that I nurse... Yeah, I was
same patient
as well.
How do you know him?
I don't know. So basically, we wanted to speak about that first, before going into the case this week, just to give a bit of background, really, as to what the services are like today. And ironically, so even though we're speaking about mental health and violence, and basically stating that, you know, the way mental health is portrayed in the media is basically completely skewed, isn't it? And it usually shows mental health patients as being violent or scary, or which they're really not, actually. They're usually scared themselves.
Some are. Violence is scary, but then again, some of the population without mental health problems are violent and scary. So,
well, I work with the police, and I can definitely say there's a lot of not very nice people out there.
Yeah.
But ironically so, we are actually talking about somebody with a mental health problem who ends up killing someone else.
Yeah. I mean, it is a true crime podcast, isn't it?
So, yes.
But we want to talk about the other stuff first.
Yeah.
You know, just to give it some...
But just to confuse context. You all, we're going to talk about someone
who's
a mental health patient.
Well, he'd had contact mental health services.
We'll discuss that later, Neil. Mm. So the case that we're going to talk about happened in 2009 near...
Bury St. Edmunds
in Suffolk. And it involved a so-called delusional, in quotes, slaughter man.
So slaughterman.
Is that a name? Is that an actual...
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Works in an
abattoir.
He works
in a slaughterhouse. A what?
An abattoir.
Abattoir.
Where they kill animals, basically.
I didn't know that was the name of where they killed animals.
Well, or a slaughterhouse.
So a slaughterman.
Sounds awful, doesn't it?
I mean, he is awful, though. So.
What do you do for a living? You know, I'm a slaughterman.
You couldn't pay me enough money to do that job.
God, no.
So his name was John MacFarland. So John was 40 years old at the time and was basically really obsessed and wanting this relationship with a woman he knew called Mary Griffiths. Who was a fitness instructor. I believe she was 39 years old at the time.
38, I believe.
Oh, pardon. So at one time they worked together. MacFarland worked part-time in the local leisure centre, and she was obviously working there again, and that's where they met. So on the day of this incident, Mary had posted a comment on Facebook talking about MacFarland, basically saying he's delusional if he ever thought he'd be in a relationship with her.
I think he'd been
trolling her a little bit and annoying her.
He'd been trying to...
But we don't know to what extent, though. He could actually have been, like, properly harassing her, so that was her way of getting that forward. But I always say, don't put anything on Facebook, because it's just, like...
No, I mean, we're not... You know. We're not trying to... victim blame here, are we, about Mary?
No, but, I mean, God, like, how many times a day does that happen? You see on Facebook somebody putting up something.
Maybe she was just so pissed off that she, it was just their it was way just like of her venting, way of, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So on the day of the incident, she posts this comment, and on the night in question, in May 2009, McFarland actually made his way around to Mary's house and put an axe to the back door. So he broke in, gained entry to the house, and what he did was actually he turned off all the lights and proceeded to go upstairs into her bedroom. He dragged her out from her bed, beat her up and attempted to strangle her. She did manage to escape the house. However, he chased after her and actually shot her in the back and chest with a bolt gun. I don't know what a bolt gun is.
Well, I think, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't have one of these, but I think it's one of the things that they... funny enough, no. But I think it's one of the things that they use in an abattoir, isn't it, a slaughterhouse, that they actually, sadly...
They kill the cows with.
Well, or whatever animals... Yeah, it's horrendous, isn't it? But
that is so dark, isn't it, though?
Well,
I mean, I eat meat and I love meat, but God, I love cows too.
I very, very rarely eat meat, don't I?
Well, I don't really eat meat that much, do I?
No, you don't at all, but...
The poor cows.
Why did you think they just died of old age and then
I would like to think that.
Afraid not. It's grim, isn't it?
It is awful. So one of Mary's three daughters was in the house at the time.
No, I think they all were actually.
Oh, they all were in the house. And that's even worse, isn't it? Yeah. Do we know what ages they were?
I think there was something along the line about like the youngest 8 and the oldest about 13. So old enough to know exactly what the hell was going on.
That is...
It's not like they were, you know,
young
a baby.
Enough to be really screwed up by that.
Phenomenal, isn't it?
So the daughters were in the house. One of them was heard by the neighbour shouting, "Stop it, stop doing it." And one of the other neighbours described the murder as an execution and, quote, clinical. So McFarland texted a friend afterwards after he shot the bolt gun through her head. Or was it through her head?
I think she shot back in the chest when she was running away, and then in the chest, wasn't it?
Awful. And so he texted one of his friends and said to his friend, basically he'd done it, teach her a lesson. I don't really know how you can teach a dead person
that,
a lesson.
She's not going to learn from that.
And said that she had ripped out his heart and stamped on it. Very dramatic, John McFarland.
John McFarland. So it's documented that McFarland had a depressive illness. On May the 2nd, he attempted suicide, and on the 3rd, he had a mental health act assessment.
Was this right before?
Yeah, it was a few days before, yeah. Not like on the same day, but...
Yeah.
So he had a mental health act assessment, which was arranged by the local crisis team.
Neil, what's a mental health act assessment?
Well, obviously it's when the outcome of a mental... So there'd be two doctors... And an AMP, which could be an occupational therapist, a social worker, or a nurse.
They wouldn't know what an AMP is, though.
And an approved mental health.
Usually a social worker, but
usually social worker.
Trained in mental health.
Yeah. And basically, they decide whether they need detaining under the Mental Health Act or not, whether they need admission or treatment by
a crisis team.
A crisis
kind of in the
team could be one of them.
So they look at all the risk and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They
weigh it all up.
You know, weigh everything up.
And obviously, if the patient's willing to go into hospital anyway, then they
and a professional deems that they need that kind of level.
May well go in informally without the need to section, but very often people don't want to go in.
Yeah. Well, if they're very poorly, they might not even realize
realize they're unwell. So the crisis team, so their sort of aim is to try and treat people at home.
Where's the resolution bit come in? Crisis resolution and home treatment team.
I should know this, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you should.
Me
too, really.
I don't know. Yeah. So the crisis team, that team consists of mental health nurses.
It's basically like a hospital at home, isn't it?
Yeah, psychiatrists, support workers as well.
And again, that comes back to care in the community. But, you know, rightly so, it's, you know, you want to be as least restrictive as possible.
That's right. Yeah.
You don't want to be detaining people against their will if they don't need to be.
No, you're breaking social networks, aren't you, and things like that.
Yeah, keep people at home, you know, within their own community and trying to help them to cope and get through... their relapse, really, in their community.
So McFarlane, he wasn't deemed as detainable under the Mental Health Act, and he wasn't considered a danger to himself or to others. Although he wasn't detained, he was seen and continued to be home treatment by the crisis team. And, you know, people might think, well, you know, knowing what, well, with the benefit of hindsight, but we know now what he did.
But obviously
the healthcare professionals at the time, they didn't know that.
Yeah, they just work on the information that they have.
That they've
basically got.
Well, that's all you can do. And what he's saying, I'm presuming he didn't say, I am going to kill a woman.
No, I would imagine not.
Well, you would hope that he didn't say that and then they didn't do something, whether that be the police or... So that, you know, I mean, it's tragic what happened, but obviously you can only go on the history. He may not have had any history of any violence. You know, he tried to kill himself, but... You know, no history of wanting to kill anyone else.
So, and actually, we come across a lot of suicidal people or people who've, you know, attempted suicide or self-harm, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, you can't speak for everyone because obviously every person and every event is, you know, is individual in itself. But a lot of the time when people try to hurt themselves, it's quite, what's the word?
I don't know what you want to say.
Like, do you know when you drink alcohol and that makes you more...
What, impulsive? What?
Impulsive. Yeah, so like, basically, it can be quite an impulsive act at the time. Mm. And not always, but people can, you know, after they have done the act, they can basically change their mind and just
regret
kind of have that hindsight and say, actually, do you know what, I felt really impulsive at the time, but actually I don't necessarily feel to that extent now.
Yeah.
So just because he tried to kill himself doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, he's going to try again or
that kind
of thing. So, yeah.
So on the night of the murder, he made a 999 call to police stating that there was a burglary in progress at the farm that he worked at. So presumably this slaughterhouse abattoir was attached to this farm.
Ooh, the cows!
So living in a semi-rural area, he created this diversion to give him more time to kill Mary. So he, you know, quite clinical and quite thought out and considered.
Thought out, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's like first degree kind of evidence.
So the police are on the way to, you know, this farm. But meanwhile, he went to Mary's house and eventually killed her.
Yeah.
So he was eventually jailed for life, which obviously doesn't lessen the impact to Mary's three daughters and family. In 2019, Mary's children attempted to sue Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust and Suffolk Police, stating the mother's death was preventable. They stated that on the night of the murder, a police constable was due to come round to see Mary about her concerns regarding McFarlane.
So she'd obviously gone to the police before.
Yeah, with concerns.
And kind of said that maybe, you know, he's harassing me or something.
Yeah. You know, I've told him, but he still won't, you know, he won't.
I wonder to what extent he actually was harassing her, though. It's a pity we don't have that
information. Well, I'm presuming social media. Because that would have been a direct link.
I wonder, was he like hanging out outside her house?
Possibly.
Or lying?
I mean, she must have felt sufficiently sort of, you know, bothered that she did that.
Yeah, and is that why he killed himself? Well, tried to kill himself, I mean.
Is that why he tried to... maybe.
That he felt like, you know.
That this woman doesn't
want
him.
Weren't going to.
Maybe.
His delight.
So police constable was going to come round and see Mary about her concerns on the actual night of the murder. Well, evening before the murder. The murder was in the early hours. But the visit had to be rearranged for the next day. But, you know, we spoke about this, didn't we? But I don't think that would have even prevented a death because it's not like the police constable would have come round. You know, he might have come round at, say, 6:30 in the evening.
Had a chat with her.
Had a chat with her about, I don't know, home security, taking details about this McFarlane, what he's done.
Yeah.
Maybe say, I'll go and have a word with him. But I don't think he'd have, you know, he wouldn't have been putting bars up against the doors and the windows, would he? It would have just been...
No, and he'd be there for, you know, a certain amount of time.
He'd have been there for half an hour maybe, and then he'd be on his way, wouldn't he?
Yeah. And, like, I get it from the kids' point of view. Like, of course they want to blame somebody and hold somebody accountable. I get it. But... from the information that we have anyway, I really don't feel like you can prevent that.
Well, it's very hard to predict, isn't it? I mean, there was some predictive...
You can't. There is nothing predictive about it, though. Well,
the information we've got. If someone's listening to this that has got other information, then, you know...
Grand, whatever.
I
mean, if he was literally saying to somebody, oh, you know, I'm going to hurt her or something, like she's going to pay for this. But we don't know whether that happened and we have to just presume it didn't, in which case... there's nothing that, you know, mental health or police could have done, actually, I don't think.
And we're not just saying this as mental health nurses who work for the NHS, because, you know, it's about learning as well, isn't it? If there was failings there.
Yeah, definitely. But I wonder, is there a report done or anything from the NHS? It'd be interesting to see.
You would imagine. I mean, whether it's, you'd probably have to request that.
Freedom of information or something, yeah.
But Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust stated there was nothing to suggest an imminent risk to life. And Mary's children didn't succeed in a court, in the court action. So presumably there would have been a thorough, I mean, that was like 10 years on, wasn't it? There would have been a thorough investigation of the police actions, of the information that the, you know, that the healthcare team had got, and, you know, what they did. Should they have done more?
But I mean, it is what it is, really. I mean, coming back to like his mental health as well, like as we discuss this case, I'm like, is his mental health even part of this? Yeah, he had a, you know, a diagnosis of depression, but that doesn't mean to say that he didn't know what he was doing and understand kind of the gravity of his actions.
Absolutely. I mean, you could have a...
So really, when we said actually at the very beginning that, you know, this is a mental health patient who killed somebody, in a way, it's kind of neither here nor there, actually.
Well,
it's not really applicable.
No, and that's, again, that leads into the...
Depression doesn't cause you to kill people.
That leads into the, you know, the sensationalism, doesn't it? You know, to stick on front of the papers.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could have, you know, you could take it to the extreme and you could have a diagnosis of, say, schizophrenia.
Yeah.
But you could still have capacity at different times over different things.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of that level of insight. I mean, you can be somebody who has a diagnosis of schizophrenia. You can hear voices and you could very much have voices telling you to do things like hurt people. But it doesn't mean that that person doesn't have any control over that. They might not have control over that when they're more poorly.
No.
But they're still able to, you know, they may be able to have that understanding that actually it's a voice. Mm. It's not, you know, it's I have control over myself kind of a thing. But
so
I mean, with depression, that's just not something that happens, though. Yeah, he had low mood. He has... It can cloud your thinking.
Yeah, it can cloud your thinking, and it could have been if he was feeling kind of hopeless, you know, worthless, maybe that, and this woman didn't want him. It could have gone that way, but...
It's not an excuse, though, is it?
Of course it's not an excuse. It's never any excuse, but... so one of the reasons why we picked this case is really, it kind of... We talked about sensationalism, didn't we?
Yeah.
And... This was reported as, you know, delusional man. Well...
Yeah, but there's lots of delusional people out there who are not mentally ill.
Mary said that...
I mean,
you know,
I think I'm gorgeous.
Yeah, you're brilliant, don't you? You are, my love.
Thank you.
But you know, Mary said in this kind of Facebook message, didn't she, your post, that he's delusional. But I don't think she was kind of meaning it in...
In a mental health sense.
No, it's just kind of a word, isn't it?
It's a delusional, word. It's just a word.
Yeah, so anyway.
So yeah, I think that's the end of the episode. So thank you for listening. As always, you can catch us on facebook.com/madorbad. Please like us, share us, leave a review. You can also catch us on Twitter @madorbadthepod. Please add us again. And leave us a review on the lovely Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you find your podcast. We'll see you next time.